Exposing the Enemy, Session 5. Exposing the Roaring Lion.
Luke chapter 10, Jesus said, "Behold, I give you the authority to trample on serpents and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing shall by any means hurt you." And that's a very important scripture because it tells us two things. The devil's our enemy, and we have all authority over him. That's very important. John 10:10, Jesus says, "The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that you may have life and you may have it more abundantly." So Jesus is telling us here something very important about the devil, and that is he's pure evil. There's no good in the devil. He's pure evil. And his desire for all of us is pure evil. And then 1 Peter chapter 5, where I ask you to turn there, here's where we find about the roaring lion. Peter says in verse 8, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Resist him steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world." And so he uses the analogy of a roaring lion. Be sober, be on the alert, because you have an enemy. And he's prowling around just like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. And remember, it's not the word "can devour," because that would mean ability. He's looking for someone who will give him permission to devour them. Now, none of us would ever want to be devoured by the enemy, but I want to remind you, 60% of believers don't believe in the devil, according to Barna Research poll. Many believers just have no awareness of the devil, and they don't believe in him. So that's one of the reasons they're such easy prey, is because they have no understanding that they are being stalked by an evil enemy and that they have an evil enemy. So according to Peter, he tells us there are two things that we need to do to keep from being devoured by the devil. The first is, he says, be sober. In other words, have self-control, but be in control of yourself. He says, be sober. And what that doesn't mean legalism. It doesn't mean that we can't have fun. It just means that we don't get out of control. The areas that we don't keep discipline, the areas that we allow to get out of control, that's one of the reasons the devil devours us. The second thing he says is be vigilant, or be watchful. Be aware, just like you would in enemy territory. And if some of us who remember pre-9/11, in September 11th of 2001, when we were attacked on our own soil by terrorists, well, they had been attacking us for years, all over the world. They had been attacking our military installations and our embassies all over the world, but we were getting on airplanes, carrying all kinds of stuff with the cockpit door open, never thinking a thing about it until 9/11. Until we woke up one day and realized there were evil people who wanted to destroy us. And the world has changed. The world has dramatically changed since 9/11, because finally, societies all over the world that were previously naive, Europe, the United States, societies all over the world, are waking up to realize there are evil people in the world who want to destroy us. And it doesn't mean you live in fear, but it just means you're aware. There's a vigilance, and there is a vigilance today that wasn't there before 9/11. And many Christians need to wake up to the fact that we have an evil enemy, because many Christians are still very, very naive as it relates to the devil. So then Peter gives us two things to do, and then he gives us three reasons that we need to do them. Here's what he says. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So the first thing he says is the devil's adversarial. Now I want you to listen to me. Now some of you would say, well, see, Jimmy, I'm just a very nice person. You know, I'm sweet like you, because we know I'm sweet. I'm a very sweet person. It makes him madder. He's evil. He doesn't like sweet people. He doesn't like good people. You say, well, I help elderly people. I make cookies for the Girl Scouts. He hates you. He wants you to send letter bombs to people. He hates good people. He is your adversary, whether you like it or not. That's what Peter's saying here. And it's personalized. Your adversary, the devil. The second thing is he's active. He's prowling around. He's not waiting for you to come to his territory. He's coming to your territory. He's stalking you. He's trying to produce a mistake in you that would give him an opportunity. He is active. The third thing is his appetite is for total destruction. He wants to devour you. He's not a snacker, and he's not a licker. He's a devourer. He's not your friend. He's not your pet. He's a devourer. And so what Peter is saying here is you need to be careful because you have an evil enemy and he's your adversary and he's actively pursuing an opportunity to destroy your marriage, to destroy your family, to destroy your health, to destroy everything in your life that's precious and holy. Okay, so does that mean that we need to fear the devil? Absolutely not. We have been given authority over the devil. We don't have to fear him, but we need to understand him. So I want to teach you about lions because we're talking about exposing the roaring lion. About 1999, Karen's parents took our entire family to Africa. And so we had two guides in South Africa. That was the first place we went. Our guides were named Blessed and Solomon. Makes you feel better. And so Blessed and Solomon and all of our guides, they taught us about lions. And I would say to Blessed and Solomon, and I would say, are you afraid of lions? They said, no. They said, we respect them, but we don't fear them because we understand how they function. We understand. And as long as you respect their nature, you can be safe. I want to teach you what they taught us about lions and how you can live your life safely and never be devoured by the devil, but to overcome him. I want to teach you how you can do that because that's what they taught us. Number one, lions are nocturnal. If you're going to be safe in lion country, one of the first things you learn is you're safe in the day, you're not safe at night. Okay. And so we, in the daytime in our camp, as an example of this, there were warthogs and monkeys and all kinds of critters like that. But the bad animals were not in our camp during the day. We had to go find the bad animals. And when you find lions in the day, they're typically sleeping. There are a lot of times they're just on their back and they're sleeping. They sleep for like 20 hours a day. At night, they are very, 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 very active. We would go out at night and we were in a truck and they would use our truck as stealth to hunt Cape Buffalo and other things like that. So they're very active. So when we got to the camps, the first thing you do when you get to these game camps is you have to sign a waiver that says, if I'm killed, I won't hold you responsible. And we call that vacation. So we get to this first camp in South Africa, and I mean, the first thing you do is they take you in this room and you have to sign this waiver. So we signed this waiver at maybe 10 or 11 in the morning. So we went out all afternoon into the early evening, into the bush. It was absolutely fascinating. Saw lions, saw all the big five. It was a fascinating day. So we came back from the first day, and we stayed in bungalows that were not connected. The main lodge and dining hall were over here, and then all of our bungalows were scattered out, and they didn't have telephones, so you couldn't call each other. So when we came back from being out that day, they took all of us to our bungalows, and they said, Don't come out of your bungalow, okay? Because the wild animals come into the camp at night, okay? So don't come out of there. We'll come get you for dinner. An armed guard needs to come get you for dinner. Don't leave this bungalow. And they said, we'll be back in about 45 minutes. That's great. So we went in and we got ready for dinner, showered and got ready for dinner, but no one ever came to get us. And I was hungry. And so I said, we had waited for like an hour and 15 minutes. And I said to Karen, I said, you know, Karen, I don't know if anybody's coming to get us. So I went over to the front door and opened the front door and stepped out on the porch. And I could see the lights to the dining hall. And I turned around and said, Karen, I can see the lights to the dining hall. She said, close the door, Jimmy. They told us there's wild animals out there. Close the door. And I said, I don't see anything out here, Karen, but I can see. I guarantee we can make it down there. I can see the light. She said, close the door. Close the door right now. So I closed the door and I went over and sat down. 15 more minutes, nobody came. I went over and opened the door again. Stepped out on the porch, looked all over. And I said, Karen, I can see people down there going to eat. I guarantee you they're walking and we can make it down there. She said, close the door, Jimmy. Close it right now. So I closed the door and I was just real frustrated. And I went and sat down. Another 15 or 20 minutes, there was a knock on the door. So I opened the door and it was the guard, armed guard. And so we opened the door and he said, I am so sorry I'm late. I couldn't come up here because you had a leopard by your front door. I said, that wouldn't be that front door I've been standing next to for 30 minutes, would it? When I stepped out on the porch, the leopard was probably looking at me going, hey, let's don't kill him, it's his first day. Anyway, stupid people don't taste good. There was a leopard by our front door. So lesson one for Jimmy was, it's dangerous at night. Darkness is the devil's domain. You're safe in the light. You're in danger in darkness. You can't cast the devil off of his own property. And sin is his rightful property. That is his domain. Ephesians 5, you were once darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth. Finding out what is acceptable to the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them, for it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore, he says, awake, you who sleep, arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. So the number one thing you learn about lions is they're nocturnal. Stay out of the darkness and you'll be safe. Stay in the light. And I'm saying that to us spiritually. Stay in the light. We all make mistakes, make short accounts with God, and get back into the light, because the devil wants to lure you in darkness. Number two, lions are paravisual. Now, this is a crazy, crazy, crazy thing. And paravisual is my word. I don't know how to say what I'm saying, but paravisual is my word. So we were in a truck. They put us in a Range Rover truck. No ceiling, no doors, little half doors on the side here. There are like eight of us in the truck. And you go out among the animals. And the lions are all over your truck. I mean, they're all around your truck. And they don't see you. It's freaky. And I said to Solomon one day, I said, why don't they kill us? He said, well, they don't see the way you see. They don't see you as an individual. They just see this big truck. And we're too big to kill. We don't smell good. And we don't take their food. So they just really don't care about us. He says, so we're harmless. They're not going to hurt you. They said, if you step out of the truck, they'll kill you. So I did not step out of the truck. I'm not a fast learner, but I did. I learned my lesson the night before. So it was the freakiest thing. So we went and found a leopard one day. So there's maybe the leopard that almost killed me. And so this guy said, you want to go see a leopard? And we said, sure. So we went and found this leopard. And beautiful, beautiful, beautiful leopard. But you know how cats at home graze stuff when they walk by? Well, that cats in the wild do the same thing. So we're watching this leopard, and this leopard gets up and walks by our truck and grazes our truck with his body. Well, I'm sitting shotgun in the back seat. I'm sitting here like this. This leopard's head was right here. He's looking at me in the eye. He's grazing our truck, walking by, and he just looks up in my eye, and I'm just thinking, oh, I hope he's a Christian. You know, it freaked me. I'm thinking, why can't he see me? We sat one day among a pride of lions eating a Cape Buffalo. And there were probably 15 to 20 lions all over our truck, all around our truck. And they don't see you. But Blessed told me one day about a Japanese. They had a bunch of Japanese tourists that came in. And one of the dangers of being among the animals is you kind of forget how dangerous they are, because they don't hurt you because you're in the truck. Well, this Japanese man stepped outside of the truck to get a picture, and the lions killed him and ate him in front of his family. And Blessed said, if you show them an individual profile, they'll kill you. This is the truck. Christian fellowship is the truck. I want to read you a scripture, and maybe you've never seen this the way that it's written. But here's what Jesus said. Again, I say to you that if two of you agree on earth concerning anything that they would ask, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, I am there in their midst. Okay, listen to me. So two or three being gathered together in your name, what this means is committed Christian fellowship. It means we are friends because of Jesus. I don't want ungodly friends. I'll befriend anybody, but my close friends are all Christians. Okay. So it means two means a husband and wife. Two or three means your friends, your family, whatever, but Christians. That we are friends because of Jesus, and we are committed to doing the will of Jesus. So I have committed, accountable relationships. I'm not a lone ranger. I'm not off here by myself. Okay, so listen to me. Did you know, let's just say that you're together with two Christian friends, and you're hanging out, you're just having a good time, but you hold each other accountable, and you're doing the right thing because you're living for Jesus. And let's just say the devil's having a really evil day, and he wants to devour you, and he comes up, and let's just say that you and your friends are kind of small, you're kind of little, and you don't lift weights. Let's just say that you're just not bad people. You're just sweet people, and you're not a threat to anybody. And so the devil says, you know, I'm looking for somebody to devour. and he comes up to you and your little sweet friends, and he says, I think I've just met somebody that I can devour. But there's a problem. We don't see Jesus, but he does. The devil is in the spirit realm. So is Jesus. When Jesus said, where two or more are gathered there in my gathered together in my name, there I am in their midst. The devil never would attack Jesus because he knows he's already been defeated by Jesus. Even though we can't, Jesus is here right now, right? Okay, the devil never attacks a crowd. So when we're in the truck, we were sitting in the truck, we're too big to kill. Okay, and all the lions know that, so they don't attack us. Understand this. When we're with Jesus in a group of two or three believers committed to the purposes of Christ, he sees Jesus in the midst and we're too big to kill. You're safe in Christian fellowship, but when you get off by yourself, the devil loves the lone sheep. He's trying to provoke you. The lions actually, this is the freakiest thing you've ever seen. They used our truck as stealth at night. We would be going down a road and they would see a pack of Cape Buffalo over here and we would have like 15 lions. I had big lions right next to me. Using our truck to sneak up on a herd of Cape Buffalo. Well, Cape Buffalo are huge animals. And so what they would do is they spook the herd hoping for one little one or one weak one to calve off, and they kill that one. They never attack the herd. They attack the ones that are away from the herd. And I'm saying to you, you need to stay in committed Christian fellowship. If your friends are not godly, you need to find new friends. And I'm not saying reject your friends. Here's what you say to ungodly friends. I'm serving Jesus. You want to come with me? And if they do, great. And if they don't, you go find new friends. Because your friends need to be Christians. And we all, in this evil world that we live in today, we need committed Christian relationships. Number three, lions are territorial. So everything in the wild is about territory. Everything in the wild is about an animal wanting your territory. So they would tell us, we took nature walks every day. And so Blessed and Solomon one day said to us, they said, you guys want to go on a nature walk? And we said, is it safe? And they said, well, it's safe if you're with us. And they had these big hairy guns, and that was great. And so I said, well, what happens if we walk up on lions? He said, don't run. Just don't run. He said, if you don't run, you're okay. He said, if you run, they'll kill you. And he said, because they'll do a territorial display. If you see lions and they come up to you, they'll come up to you, they'll prowl around you and kind of make some noise and stuff. They're hoping that you'll run because they'll take your territory. It's all about territory. So we were in Botswana. We went from South Africa to Botswana. And in South Africa, we had gone on three or four or five nature walks with Blessed and Solomon. And it was all great. So we went on this nature walk in Botswana, and this guide came up to us and he said, hey, you guys want to go on a walk? We said, sure. And so it was Karen and me and Karen's dad and another couple. And so there were five of us plus the guide. So we got about a mile from camp, and I noticed that the guide didn't have a gun. And I said, hey, where's your gun? He said, we don't need a gun. I said, we actually need a gun. And I'm going to tell you right now, we need a gun. I said, this is what I said. I said, this is lion country. We need a gun. Where's your gun? He said, no, we don't need a gun. The animals are afraid of us. They see us as super predators because we walk on two legs. He said, just don't run. If we see lions, if we see something, just don't run. And I mean, I was freaking out. I just got to admit, I was just freaking out, completely freaking out, because I was just thinking, we are in lion country with a crazy guide. This guy doesn't know that he needs a gun. So it was just freaking me out. Now, by the way, Genesis 9:2 says God put the fear of man on the animals. My neighbor's dog doesn't know that, but all the animals do. Others do. So God put the fear of man. So this guy says to us, no, these animals fear us. Just don't run. So we're walking down this dirt road, and this bull elephant is approaching us, okay? He's a bachelor bull, which means he's been rooted out of the elephant herd by younger bulls. He's in a bad mood. He's also in musk. There is a hormone coming out of his forehead, which means he's in a triple bad mood. Okay. And he sees us. And when he sees us, he starts wagging his head and screaming, and rushes us. Okay, so when he's coming at us as fast as he can, screaming all that stuff. So the guide turns to us and says, "Don't run." I thought, "Well, I'm not running. I'm going to offer you up as an offering, sin offering, to the elephant gods here in about 2 seconds. Jerk, don't bring a gun to lion and bad mood elephant country. You know, who do you think you are?" So, I mean, seriously, we make a single file line behind this guide, and this elephant rushes us. I promise, here's what happened. This guide, this elephant, is screaming, rushing at us, and the guide goes, and the elephant stopped. And here he came again. Starts all the screaming and throwing his head. Here he comes again. The guide, like that. Elephant walks off. I said, "Jesus, Jesus, 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 Jesus. Jesus, I need to go back to camp and change my clothes. I'll tell you what. Oh, my gosh. It was terrifying. So let me say this. The purpose of a lion's roar is to intimidate you so that you'll run away from the territory. They do a territorial display. That's what the bull elephant was doing, which I didn't know about. And see, if you run, they'll kill you. Because that lets them know that you fear and that you're not going to stand your ground. Okay. So here's 2 Timothy 1:7. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. God has not given, listen to me. The roaring lion is the spirit of fear. We have good fear. Good fear is temporary and protective and circumstantial. You're driving down the street, someone swerves into your lane, you swerve out, that's good fear. It comes, it goes, and it protects you. Bad fear is chronic and debilitating. It's just this chronic fear. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and power and a sound mind. No human being is ever born with fear. It is an added extra that Satan puts there to control us. Fear is a controlling spirit by the devil to keep us off our promised land. God hadn't given us a spirit of fear. So when I got saved a week before Karen and I got married, the week after we got married, I'd been a Christian for 2 weeks, and I was sitting in the backyard reading a book. I don't remember what the book was, but I think it was a book by Billy Graham, and a sheet dropped down in front of my face, and I could see myself preaching to a multitude of people. That was when God called me to preach. And from that moment on, I had a great desire to preach. And right after that, hours or a few days after that, a terrifying fear came over me about speaking in front of people. Terrifying. Now, I was the class clown. I'd never had an insecure moment in my life. I was a class clown, never had fear about anything. But now that God called me to preach, I had a terrifying fear of speaking in front of people. So I went to work for my dad and worked for him until I was 28. And then one day the pastor of our church, I never told anybody I could preach because I was afraid of it. I wanted it, but I was afraid of it. So the pastor of our church came up and said, "Hey, I want you to come on staff as a marriage and pre-marriage counselor." And I said, "I can't do that." And he said, "Well, everybody comes to you guys for marriage counseling. Do it up here." So I quit our family business, went to work for the church, did that for 10 months. Then the pastor went to Florida, Larry Titus, great, great guy, went to Florida. And the elder said to me, "Would you fill the pulpit until we can figure out what to do for a preacher?" And I said, "Yes." And then I thought, "Jimmy, why did you say yes?" And I mean, I couldn't sleep for a week. I mean, it was terrifying. It was just one of the most terrifying things in my life. But a lot of people think that it came natural to me. Oh, no, not at all. I prepared a sermon. I don't remember anything about it because I was on the verge of blacking out the whole time I was preaching. I got up and yelled for 30 minutes and went home, went to bed. I don't remember anything. It was terrifying, terrifying. So I did it the second week, terrified again. Third week, terrified again. Fourth week, terrified again. And after about a month, they said, "Would you be our pastor?" And on the one hand, that's what was my desire. That was my passion. On the other side, I was just terrified. So I preached the next week, terrified. Next week, terrified. And the problem is the church kept growing. Just when I would kind of get used to this size, it went to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. And about the time I got used to that, radio stations called and TV stations called, then radio networks called, then TV networks called, and then I spoke in churches and conferences and larger churches and larger conferences and larger churches and larger conferences and bigger networks and bigger TV stations. And then one day Joel Osteen called me. He said, would you come preach for me in Houston? I said, yeah. 2 years ago. And I went down there, and they run 40,000 on the weekends. His church was a basketball arena. It's a massive arena. So on Sunday morning service at 11 a.m. a couple of years ago, I got up to preach, and there were 12,000 people present. And I remember getting up and preaching, and it was just fun. It was just exciting and fun. I was completely calm. And I preached to 12,000 people. And I got finished, and I got in the car, and Karen and I were on our way back to our hotel room, and Lisa Combs is Joel's sister. She's a friend of mine. So Lisa sent me a picture of me preaching. And she said, hey, Jimmy, just wanted you to see this picture from the 11 o'clock service this morning. So Karen and I are in the car, and I open my phone, pull up this picture. It's a picture of me from behind preaching at Lakewood. It's the picture that Lord showed me at 19 years old. I never knew it was a literal place. But the day that the Lord called me to ministry, a roaring lion showed up. This is my promised land, y'all. This is where I was called to be. I love to preach. I love to minister. The bigger the crowd, the better I like it. Today. But when I started out, I was terrified. And I didn't know that the fear I was experiencing was the devil. I just thought it was me. And I used to think, God, why would you call someone so fearful of speaking in public to preach? You need to do better. Go find somebody that doesn't mind it. I'm terrified of it. Why'd you pick me? And one day after about 10 years of preaching, I was reading and I saw 2 Timothy 1:7. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear. And I thought, wait. I've sure got a lot of fear. And the Lord said, not from me, you know. And it's the first time I realized fear was not my emotion. It was a demonic spirit trying to keep me from my promised land. And I stopped dealing with fear as my weakness and my emotion, and I began to understand it was a separate entity from me, and I began to take authority over it. And before I would get up and speak, this terror would come over me, this fear would come over me, and you're gonna fail, you're gonna get up and you're gonna drool, you're gonna get up and you're gonna accidentally cuss, you're gonna get up and everybody's gonna walk out mad. You're going to embarrass you. I mean, he would. He would just say all kinds of stuff like that. Just intimidation like that. And here's what I began to do that I didn't know how to do before. I bind you, spirit of fear, in the name of Jesus, and every lie you're telling me. You are a demon spirit. And you're on my territory, by the way. You're standing on my promised land. And not only am I not going to give you the land, I'm taking it back from you. That's my land. That's my promised land. And I overcame it. And I got to the point where I could lay down and go to sleep up on the platform in front of people. I love this. This is my promised land. You have a promised land. In your mother's womb, God gave you a destiny, a great destiny. And as sure as you have a destiny, there's an evil destiny, an evil devil standing on your promised land, roaring at you, saying, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you'll never do this. Who do you think you are? And he's roaring, but he's stealthy. He implants this fear because it's a control spirit. He implants this fear, but he doesn't tell us it's him. We think it's us. Well, I'm just fearful of flying. I just want to throw up every time I look at an airplane. Did you know God may have called you to the mission field? And the devil's trying to keep you from it? Did you know that your actual calling may have something to do with travel? Well, I'm just fearful of people. I'm just fearful of failure. I'm just fearful of rejection. I'm just fearful of what everybody thinks. I'm just fearful. No, you're not. God hasn't given you a spirit of fear. You don't have any fear. You were not born with any fear. All of the fear is an add-on from the devil to control you. And you know, if I were in some tent in the middle of Wyoming by myself, I don't think I would have ever had a fear of speaking in front of people because I wasn't close to my promised land. I didn't experience the fear until they came to me and said, would you fill the pulpit this weekend? And then the devil knows, uh-oh, he's going to try to take his promised land away from us. See, when you experience that fear, the devil knows you're getting out of line. And so he roars. You get back in your place. You sit down there. You live a little life and be quiet. And it's time for the people of God to expose the roaring lion and to understand what he's up to. And for us to take our promised land from the devil, we have authority over him in the name of Jesus. The devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Blessed Solomon said, don't run. Don't run. I'm saying something else. Don't run. Attack him. Run to the roar. He's already been defeated. Kick him off your promised land and live your life the way that God intended.